We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
You know, it's Halloween. I guess everyone's entitled to one good scare.
Be afraid.
No. Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Ghouls and gore. And sometimes a little more. My Bloody Podcast.
Hello, everyone. It is My Bloody Podcast time. Hooray! I'm so excited this week. We're going to be talking about a fun movie on My Bloody Podcast this week, which we are on, of course, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and brand new Spotify. Hello. I'm Brian Kluger. Boomstickcomics.com and HighDefDigest.com. That's where you can find me. And, of course, I am joined by my bestest friend who crawls out under my bed to make me laugh and scare me, Preston Barta of FreshFiction.tv and the Denton Record Chronicle. How the heck are you, buddy?
Well, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Maurice. Oh my goodness, people on My Bloody Podcast today, our 64th episode. I mean, that's pretty badass, right?
Yeah, that is badass.
It is badass. We're going to be talking about the 1989 film for our feature presentation, 1989's Little Monsters, starring Fred Savage, Daniel Stern, Howie Mandel. Oh my goodness, cannot wait to get into this. Of course, we've got bloody questions and bloody recommendations, but first, the bloody bits of news, good sir. Are you ready to jump into this? Is there anything you want to talk about before the bloody bits?
I just need a good shoulder to cry on.
A good shoulder to cry. Well, my shoulders are here for you to cry on and do whatever else you would like to do to them.
Mm.
Dry hump them. I don't care.
Lube them up.
Lube up them shoulders. You know what? I'm pretty hairy on my shoulders. I wonder if that'd be like ribbed for your pleasure.
Oh, gosh, God.
That was over the line for Preston. I don't get it. I don't know where the line is. I'm a habitual line stepper.
There's points where it gets fun, and then there's points where you're thinking of your audience, and even then they're probably like, I don't know, guys.
They're coming back. They keep coming back. Yeah. I mean, we're on Spotify now. People are just hearing us. They must like it. I just like when Preston gets uncomfortable. It's pretty fun.
With Brian, it's pretty easy.
It is pretty easy. I like it uncomfortable. And then I get to see Preston in the flesh this week, too. I'm very excited.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yes. We've got lots to talk about. Bloody bits of news and shoulders to cry on. First up, can we talk about the movie I saw this week? It's a horror movie.
Yeah, it's one that I really, really wanted to see, but just couldn't make it. But I hear it's great. I've heard from multiple people it's great. Rotten Tomatoes confirms, but let's hear what you have to say.
That was kind of a rhyme. I like it. Ready or Not was the movie I watched, and it is from the filmmaking club Radio Silence, who did the best segment in the VHS film franchise, the 10/31/98 segment, which is excellent. And it's a bloody wonderful movie for all the right reasons. It's kind of like my takeaway from it. I kind of give it a thing. Like I say that it's an incredibly darkly comedic film that's part The Purge and kind of part Jumanji in a very twisted way, where an uber wealthy family looks to kill people to join their clan, their family, and it's so much fun. And it's weird because, you know, going into this movie, and I know we've talked about this before, I think on the podcast, Preston, there was a movie called The Hunt. You know that?
Yes.
So The Hunt is a movie that kind of like the same similar situation where there's a group of people out
to kill. It's the most dangerous game.
Yeah, kind of kill and hunts people with different political beliefs. And it's kind of the same thing here. But with the hunt actually got canceled because Fox News and the current person in the White House just conjured up a...
Voldemort.
Yes, a big mess of idiotic debates on, like, they should cancel this movie because it's this. But then Fox News, the same company, put out this movie... Ready or Not, which kind of like is much more subtle in its political and class system in America, but it made me think, like, how did this get released and not the other one, because it's kind of the same thing.
Somewhere out there, Quentin Tarantino's going, because it's fun, Jan.
because it's fun. No, I know. I want these movies to be released. Like, I'm not saying it shouldn't. I just don't know why The Hunt and this one were different. I don't know why. Which I could probably imagine because The Hunt supposedly was a bunch of liberals hunting conservatives. Or Democrats hunting Republicans. That's probably why. But anyway, back to the movie at hand. It kind of focuses on a girl named Grace who marries into this really wealthy family who made their fortune at board games. And I guess it's tradition that on the wedding night, the whole family must play a chosen game at random. It could be like chess or checkers or Pictionary, but the new bride picks hide and seek, and it's not your normal hide and seek. It is hide and seek with weapons, and it's the whole family seeking the new bride out and trying to kill her with all different types of weapons. So you can see kind of where The Purge and Jumanji fit in there. And it's just, it's so funny. They got it so right because, you know, you think like, okay, this family knows what they're doing with weapons. And of course they do not, because it takes place present day and these people do not know how to handle a weapon at all. So hilarity ensues, but there's also some tense moments and, oh, it's so much fun. I mean, the amount of comedy and dark humor in this movie just mixes perfectly with kind of the gore and violence. And there's a bit of a supernatural element to it as well, which was done perfectly. And then you get to see Adam Brody and Andy McFucking Dowell in this. And they're both great in it. So, yeah, I definitely recommend Ready or Not. It is a bloody, wonderful, good time. Any questions, Preston?
No, because my wife and I plan to go see it this weekend, and I've heard that it's great, and so I'm all set.
Cool, yeah. I can't
so
wait.
I'm more ready than not.
Aha, aha. No, I'm curious to see your take on it, but these guys from Radio Silence, Matt Bettinelli Olfin and Tyler Gillett, these dudes just know what they're doing. They've done a couple other smaller films, but I think this one will make the most money for them. And their ability to mix this humor, because it all seems realistic humor. It's kind of like what we would do in this situation. And they're just like great lines, like in John Wick, you know, like after like something crazy happens and you just hear the, oh, it's like stuff like that. That's great. I think you'll like it, Preston. I think you'll just like, oh, they did a good job here. They knew exactly what they were doing. So yes, good on Ready or Not. I look forward to more from this filmmaking duo. But yeah, Ready or Not. Moving on, let's talk about... So a couple weeks ago, we did a Fantastic Fest episode. Fantastic Fest is coming up. Fantastic Fest 15 in Austin, Texas. And they announced the second wave. And we got a closing night film as well as other things. Preston, does this second wave stack up to the first wave? Is it less than? Is it equal to? Is it better? And are you excited?
I would say it's about equal to, because it has a good amount of films that are films that we guessed that could possibly be part of Fantastic Fest, and now they're confirmed. And so a good mix of noticeable titles and titles that are just ready for you to figure them out. So, yeah, we found out that the closing night film is Rian Johnson's Knives Out.
Can't wait for that.
You going to stay?
So my plan is, so here's my thing. Knives Out is getting a wide release no matter what. That's fine. I don't have to see it at the festival. I mean, I'd like to, but it's going to be released. So I will fly back to Austin for closing night if...
you get like an interview opportunity?
A one-on-one interview for at least half an hour. It would not be worth it otherwise. So I will fly to Austin, stay the night, and fly back. Or I would fly back and forth on the same day. Are you staying the whole time? Are you doing it?
I don't think I'm staying the entire time, but I'm also kind of in the same boat. I don't need half an hour, but if I got some time to talk with Rian Johnson, that'd be worth it to me.
No, that would be awesome. I just think that, like, if it's like 10, 15 minutes, it's just not enough time for Rian Johnson.
Well, usually it's like 15 to 20.
Right, that's true. So we'll see. I guess, Preston, if you're willing to go down there and we both get interview times, we should go down together. Let's take a quick trip to Austin on Saturday.
Thelma and Louise, let's hold hands.
Oh, by God, yes.
Except we're not going to die. We're going to
live.
We're going to meet Rian Johnson.
Yes. I'm excited about this movie. It's like a crazy, crazy cast of, you know, all sorts of A-list actors. You know, you have Jamie Lee Curtis. You have, what's his name?
Chris Evans. Yeah. And Tony Collette. Christopher Plummer.
Yeah. It's insane.
What's his name from Get Out? Lakeith Stanfield.
Oh, okay. So he was, the first to go in Get Out. And Lakeith, right. From 12.
Short-term 12.
Short-term 12, yes. No, yeah. Rian Johnson, of course, who did Looper and Brick and The Last Jedi. I'm excited. And the movie's like over 2 hours, so it's almost two hours.
It seems like that's usually the case with like a whodunit movie.
Right. So I you know, this goes back to his roots with Brick, kind of like that noir whodunit type of thing, right?
Yeah, that it seems like it has like that kind of fun feel of like the Brothers Bloom. So yeah, it's a good stepping stone for him before he gets back into that trilogy that he's going to do, that original trilogy for Star Wars. So I think that this looks fun. The trailer looks great. So I think it's a good closing night film, even though I believe it's also going to be playing at the Toronto International Film Festival. And I believe James Cole Clay is going to see it there.
No, that's so awesome. That is too cool. I'm excited. But,
What are some of the other ones? Parasite, that was one that we speculated about even last week. And so it's cool that now that we got that confirmation, and then Bong Joon-ho is going to be there in person.
Yeah, no, I'm super excited. So you have like Bong Joon-ho and Takashi Miike together. I mean, I don't know what to think about that. I'm... I have no idea. But one thing I'm very interested about about is a movie called Butt Boy.
As soon as I saw that, there's usually like one like humorously titled film each year. In one past previous year at Fantastic Fest, there was Pervert Boy.
Right.
It's fun because... You act like a kid. I remember when it was Pervert Boy was playing, and then James Cole Clay and I were just sitting out in the lobby, and we were just giggling like school kids. So there's another one. Here's another one for the stack.
Yeah, no. So Butt Boy is the world premiere, and it follows a dude who goes to his first prostate exam, and then it looks like he becomes addicted to prostate exams or sticking things up his butt. So, oh my goodness. That just sounds right
like
up
Brian's month. Friday night.
It does. So I think I will be definitely be seeing that one for sure. Oh my! And then is there another one for you? Or no, actually, I'm curious. What about Color Out of Space?
That was going to be my next one. So yeah, Color Out of Space. I'm a big Richard Stanley fan. I really love that documentary that came out a couple of years ago at Fantastic Fest, Lost Soul, and it was about the island of Dr. Moreau. And that guy is just like such an eccentric dude. He directed Hardware, but he's like such a eccentric dude, and he was just like walking around wearing a hat, and he was just like off by himself and just chilling. And so the idea of him doing another film, and not only just a film, it has Nicolas Cage in it, and they've released a couple of pictures already, and it has like all this like trippy colorful colors, but they look like that has that neon glow of Vice Squad that we reviewed last week, and something like a Nicholas Winding Refn film, and I don't know, that just those talents involved doing a trippy movie, and which is based on a H.P. Lovecraft short story. That's all you really need to know.
There you go. I'm all in for this. Hopefully this is one of the good Nick Cage movies and not a bad one.
Yeah, like Mandy.
Mandy was good. So another one that has my interest piqued, which I think doesn't look like a horror film, but it looks like a very feel-good movie. It's called The True Adventures of Wolf Boy. It has its North American premiere, and it's like a kid who suffers from that disease that covers him with animal-like fur all over his body. Mm. And his estranged mother sends him a package that will send him on a journey of self-discovery alongside extraordinary characters. And that just sounds like a lot of fun to me. Coming-of-age movie, weird, I don't know. This sounds good to me. I kind of want to see that.
Yeah.
And then, is there another one you want? Is there another one you like?
There's a few. Quickly, I'll mention The Lodge. We've talked about that a couple of times. That's the follow-up from the Goodnight Mommy directors, which
I love.
Goodnight Mommy was the secret screening a couple years ago at Fantastic Fest, 5 years ago. So this movie's been getting really good reviews out of a variety of different film festivals. They say that it's really scary, so it's you can pair it with movies like The Witch, I guess The Lighthouse of this year, which I hope makes it in the final wave. Very hopeful about that. So it has that witch kind of feel, Midsommar, Hereditary, so something along those lines. So it'll be fun. Then in terms of retro screenings, they're going to do a special screening of Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge. Just recently in Dallas, they screened that, and they had the director and the actor Mark Patton in town. But what makes this interesting this year is that not only are they screening that, but they're screening a documentary about the star from Freddy's Revenge, Mark Patton, and his experience of being a part of that film and the sorts of things that he's encountered since being a part of it, what it's done to his career. If you look up so the movie's called Scream, Queen, My Nightmare on Elm Street. And so the documentary itself, like, you can watch the trailer online right now, and it's a famously queer horror sequel to the original Nightmare on Elm Street. So it has all this gay subtext in it, and this documentary kind of peels back those layers and examines them head on, even to uncomfortable degrees, with having the director a part of it and the writer. And it's Mark Patton kind of like putting these filmmakers in a tight spot to examine like where their headspace was at. So it looks like really interesting, getting into some dark stuff and maybe make you aware of things that maybe you didn't quite notice from a movie that just seems like, hey, it's another sequel slapped on a very long list or a very long series. But there's a lot there, and it's more problematic than just story stuff. There's subtext there to talk about and discuss. So I'm very excited about that one. I actually have a link to watch that film, so I'm going to try to watch that this week and probably report next week if I'm allowed to release my thoughts on that.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm really stoked about that one. It looks really fascinating. And I guess that's
what about, I'm looking forward to Vivarium.
Yes.
Again, it stars Jesse Eisenberg and Imogen Poot, who were just in the amazing karate movie recently.
Art of Self-Defense.
Yes. And this looks like they're a couple who are in the suburbs or drive out to a maze of temptingly affordable houses in the suburbs to look for a house, and they find themselves unable to leave there. And that sounds good to me. I'm in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I wonder if who's all will be there and stuff like that. But yeah, not a bad at all second feature. I have to mention there's a movie called Lyle coming out, mm-hmm. And that was from 2014, which I never saw. Did you see this?
No, I have not.
But it looks like it stars Gabby Hoffman, which is our friend Gwen Reyes' favorite person. but it looks
I don't like her either.
It's Preston's favorite person, too. But it looks kind of like a – or what it seems like is what's the movie – the satanic people trying to get the baby – Rosemary's Baby. Yeah, this kind of what it looks like.
Rosemary's fucking baby.
Rosemary's fucking baby, man.
That's a Once Upon a Time in Hollywood reference for you.
We should make that reference quite a bit. I like it.
I'm going to make another one by the end of this episode.
All right, I can't wait. But yeah, so go to fantasticfest.com, get your badges, get your passes, see what's all coming out. I'm sure there will be a final and third wave announcement as well as a schedule put up with all the parties. We'll talk about that when it comes out, but that is Fantastic Fest coming up September 19th, run for 10 days at the Alamo Draft House. It'll be quite fun for sure. So please come out and say hi to Preston and I, because we will be there for the 15th annual Festival of Fantastic.
Yeah, if you just Google our names, you can see what we look like, and then you can find us a little easier. Or sometimes, I hear it on other podcasts that I listen to, people get recognized by their voices.
Oh, so, that would be awesome. We'll have name tags,
I think
it would
be easier
for
them to find you, Brian. But if you look in the dark corners, you might find me writing.
Right, you'll just find me just not writing.
Knocking back drinks and making uncomfortable jokes. Yeah, it's very easy to find you.
Very, very easy. It'll be a good time for sure. But let's move on. We've got a few more bits of news to get to before Bloody Question Time. But let's talk about a new movie from Robert Rodriguez. You all know him from Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
Yeah, that's the movie to mention.
No, of course, Planet Terror, the Grindhouse movie, and Machete, and Desperado, and all the good
stuff. Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
Yes, and of course the recent one, Alita Battle Angel. But I guess his next movie will be out on Netflix, and it's called We Can Be Heroes. And it sounds like basically alien invaders kidnap Earth superheroes, meaning a group of children have to team up to save their parents and the world. So with that being said, it seems kind of horror, but also seems like Sharkboy and Lava Girl or Spy Kids.
In other words, stupid.
Yeah. So is this one of his bad ones, do you think?
What? I mean, he has more bad ones than good ones.
That's true.
Yeah. I'm not a big Robert Rodriguez fan. I think it's great that I like hearing the story about like how he came up into the business, you know, starting small with El Mariachi and just making a movie with the clothes on his back and just a few quarters in his pocket, all those couch pennies. And he made a great movie, and it kind of, but then he took that like Kevin Smith dip. And, but I have to admit that I grew up loving the first Spy Kids movie just cause I was a kid at the time. So I have some affection toward that film, but now that I'm adult, it's not something that I find myself watching, and this one seems like it's dipping back into that territory, which is fine, but there's going to be audiences, primarily younger kids, that are going to eat this up and love it. So for that, that's cool. And I mean, he's naming his movie after a David Bowie song. So there's some props to give him, but it's, you know, Robert Rodriguez, I really want him to just make I didn't even like Alita Battle Angel. I think there's some, I like how it started, but didn't like how it ended up. It just kind of becomes formulaic after a while. And so I like when he gets like daring, and like Planet Terror was probably like his last good movie to me. And so I want something where he can get dark and fun, and or like Machete. I liked Machete.
The other, he does make fun stuff. Like the cast includes like Christian Slater.
Of course. For some reason, people like him.
Yeah,
he gets really good cast.
He does. And he's probably.
But then the product that he puts out stains those actors' careers,
which is very unfortunate. Oh my goodness. And, you know, the song We Can Be Heroes by David Bowie, like Preston mentioned. That song was heavily featured in Perks of Being a Wallflower, if you don't
know. And then in a lot of stuff after that.
Right. So, I don't know. I just think I just feel like if there's no Danny Trejo in the main part of his movie, it's probably not going to be good.
He's going to play like some alien character, and then that's it.
Right.
It's going to be like Dora the Explorer kind of thing.
Oh God!
Which he voiced. Danny Trejo did a voice part in that.
There you go.
So nothing to report there. I don't know why we even included it in the news.
I just figured, like, oh my God, it's an alien invasion, and it's core-esque with Robert Rodriguez. You know, he's a Texas
Watch
guy.
Watch it actually end up being very good. Then I can eat my words.
Right. Well, let's hope that's the case, because who knows?
Yeah. But, I mean, I never want a bad film.
Right. Moving on to a bit of news, which we knew that was going to happen more or less, more likely than not. John Carpenter has been asked to score the next two Halloween movies, which, you know, if they didn't, I mean, why wouldn't they? Other than that, if he passed away, why wouldn't you go back to it? He has to be part of it somehow, right?
Yeah. I mean, the score, as I've mentioned 1,000 times on this podcast already, is the best part of the new Halloween movie from 2018. So it makes me more excited knowing that the score will be good, at least.
Right. So, yeah, John Carpenter back in the composer seat again. I'm just anxiously waiting for him to get back in the director's chair again. Come on now.
Yeah. But so is it his son? It's going to be a part of it too? I can only imagine.
Like, so I guess his son Cody and Daniel Davies, I guess, looks like they'll provide it again, because they did it for the last Halloween one, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it looks like they're back aboard. But cool. I think it's, yeah, John is heavy-handed. But, yeah, so I wonder if he's just going to score both movies immediately, or if he's going to do each one, because, and I don't remember, are they filming both back to back, or are they filming?
Yeah, they're filming them back to back.
Okay, so.
So, yeah, I'm sure they'll be providing some temp stuff there, some samples, and then figure things out, and then they'll probably finalize as the movie goes, but I'm sure they're going to be, you know, also work back to back.
There you go. I like it. I love it. I want some more of it. Okay, and then another bit of news is Andy Muschietti, who did It Chapter One, is wanting to put together a big director's cut release, the super cut of It Chapter One and It Chapter Two, making a full-fledged big movie, which I'm all for. What do you think?
Yeah, so I believe he's going to be releasing a director's cut of just the first one, but then he's going to do a super cut of both films, which would be great because, you know, many of us grew up watching the TV movie, and so we're already kind of used to that format. And so I think it would be pretty fun if he could find unique ways, because It Chapter 2 has already screened out there for many critics and audiences, so you can go on the internet and find people's reactions, which are mostly positive. But a lot of people have been saying that the movie depends heavily on flashbacks. My guess is because for me, the first, if we're talking about the TV movie from 1990, I owned it on VHS, and so I still own it on VHS, but I watched like the first chapter, the first tape of it the most when it's just the kids, because that's fun. That's the coming of age aspect of it. And then as when they become adults, it's not quite as fun. And so that was a little bit of my worry with this one, but it also made me excited because they can get into some darker material. And so that's what I've heard. Thus far is that it's much scarier in comparison to the first one, which is more creepy. And so it will have a more scary moments, and then have a lot of flashbacks where it has the kids, or if you've seen the photos that released in addition to the trailer, it shows like moments where Jessica Chastain's like kind of walking around town, probably like remembering what it was like to be back there. And then it has like her, the actress that plays her, that plays the young part, there too. So, maybe creating some sort of super cut would make it a more compelling, experience.
There you go. I would very much like that, because I think I could sit down for about 4 hours and watch it, Chapter 1 and Chapter 2, together when it comes out.
Well, I guess it would be closer to 5 hours, one's like almost 3 hours.
It's crazy, crazy. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Exciting. But yeah, is there anything else in the bloody bits of news?
Yeah, there's one thing, one more, I guess two things. I guess going off of it, Stephen King has another, believe it or not, another adaptation, film adaptation that's in the works, but it's from the producer of It as well. The adaptation, or the book that it's going to be based on, is The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon, which George Romero was at one point attached to direct it, but unfortunately he passed away, so that never happened. But Chris Romero, George's former wife, still has interest in making it, so still going to make it with the team. If you don't know what the Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon is about, it's essentially about a family, or a 9-year-old who quickly tires of constantly bickering between her older brother and her recently divorced mother, and she wanders off into the wilderness by herself, and then tries to take a shortcut, but she ultimately becomes lost in this maze full of terror and peril. And so what makes it a little more interesting is that not only is there some sort of like creature out there in the woods that is like slaughtering animals and is making spooky sounds and whatnot, but it seems like it's going to be like a more in-depth drama story of this young girl having like that sense of wonder that makes a lot of coming-of-age films like The Goonies so special, is because they have that sense of wonder there. So she listens to her Walkman, and which has a broadcast of the Red Sox games. And so she likes to like mimic the performance of her favorite baseball player, which is her hero, named Tom Gordon, the titular character. So it's going to be like her trying to survive out there in the wilderness by taking inspiration from her hero. So, seems fun. Seems like the more terror-filled version of Jojo Rabbit. if you know what that movie's about. So seems fun. I'm excited about this. Most King adaptations I get pretty excited about because I'm a big fan. So there's that, The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon. No release date or any further information than that, other than that they're just working on it. Another one is a headline I saw. They're going to be making a third Deep Blue Sea, which I think is going straight to video. I did not see the second one, but I heard it was total shit. And so I won't see it, but we have reviewed the original Deep Blue Sea on here. So I don't know if that's one that I want to check out myself. But
Preston likes sharks.
I do. I watched the Mill Creek Entertainment released this like great pack of shark films, like Ghost Shark, which is really incredible if you haven't seen it. So much fun. Santa Jaws, Mississippi River Sharks, and Crocodile. Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff on there. It's really great. So I've seen all of them, and I love them. And I have Jason London in it from Dazed Confused that plays like this in one of them. They all kind of bleed into one another after a while. It's like the same stuff. It's like the same setup, just people dying from ridiculous ways. And it's almost like on the verge of being like a sleazy movie minus having nudity and everything. It just has like that bad acting and that kind of energy to it. So yeah, I like shark movies.
Nice. Deep Blue Sea. Do you think Sam Jackson will show up?
Zombie guy. They should make him into a shark.
Oh my God. Cause
there is in that pack that I was talking about, zombie shark. That he could play like a zombie shark, or like he could be something like very disturbing, like Total Recall with that guy that has like that little tumor that talks or whatever it is.
A Quado?
And it could just be like him hanging out of the shark's mouth or something like that, or he's like operating within the stomach.
Open your mind. I'm excited about that. I like it. I love it. Oh my goodness! I saw the Deep Blue Sea 3 thing, and I was like, okay, I didn't put it on the run sheet because I was like, I bet Preston's gonna do it because he loves sharks, and goddamn it, he did it.
Ah, I didn't let you down. Should we mention that the big news of the week, other than Sony and Disney cutting ties with Spider-Man, is that they're making a Matrix 4?
Yeah, no, Matrix 4, excellent. Yeah, I mean it's not. I guess part of it is horror. Like, you could say that, like, robots took over and are basically harvesting us for power. But, yeah, Matrix 4, Keanu and Carrie Ann Moss, which is weird, and the Wachowski sibling. I don't know if both of them are coming back, but I would imagine everybody's going to come back for it because why wouldn't they?
Yeah, I don't know if it's just Lana that's making it. I can't recall, but I think she's working with the author of Cloud Atlas.
Okay.
So that could make it interesting.
Because they did Cloud Atlas. The Wachowskis did Cloud Atlas, which correct. I loved. I love that movie. I know there was a huge divide with Cloud Atlas, the movie, between people.
I think it can be exciting. I think in one way it can be like, well, here's another big cash opportunity for stars and to, you know, make a quick buck on strong IP. But at the same time, you know, technology is way more scary and interesting today. And I can only imagine what the Matrix world has evolved over the last 20 years or so. So that's pretty fascinating to me.
That is good. That is very good. But yeah, there you go. Matrix 4. I'm sure we're going to have more updates on that when things become available. But I think that does it for the bloody bits of news on my bloody podcast, again, now on Spotify. We're moving on to my bloody question, where we ask a question in the horror realm, and like we kind of creative with it, and we bring it over to Reddit, and we ask people there, and we read off the fun answers to you guys listening, our sweet-smelling audience. And Preston had the idea for this question this week, which was unbelievably good. Preston Barta.
Yeah, the question this week is inspired by Fred Savage eating a peanut butter and onion sandwich from the 1989 film Little Monsters that we're doing today. So I put out the question, what food, like what unusual food from a movie in your lifetime has had you most curious to try yourself?
From like a movie, from like food. From,
correct.
Yeah, from a movie you're curious to try. So Preston, I'm curious. What is it? What is your...
There's quite a few movies I've seen where, you know, they... Like Home Alone, where he's like making weird ice cream sundaes. But the one that had me the most curious is the, I believe it's 1996, Robin Williams movie Jack. With Bill Cosby. Oh, the great Bill Cosby. There's a moment in the movie, or there's actually two. They do it in two parts, but they have a really awesome treehouse back when Bill Cosby was cool. They're all up there. All the kids are up there in this treehouse. And I should say, if you don't know what Jack is about, it's about Robin Williams being like this guy that grows really, really fast. So by the time he's in grade school, he looks like he's a 40-something-year-old. And so he's a grown-up kid. He's a man-child. And so all these kids, all these neighborhood kids are hanging out in this treehouse. And they have this, like, scum bucket thing. Like, they have coffee cans, and they throw all kinds of weird shit inside. At one point, they put, like, real worms and everything, and, like, chocolate syrup, whipped cream, all kinds of stuff. Ketchup. It's just like a suicide bucket. So when I was a kid, that had me curious. And so I had like I remember dumping out a Folgers coffee can and rinsing it out of my dad's. And I put like all our leftover food in there that we had, and like gummy worms and all sorts of things. And so me and my neighborhood kids, friends, did the same thing, and we, ate it. So that had me the most curious, and I actually did it.
Very nice. I like that. You know, it reminds me, because I used to do this as a kid too, kind of similar to Freaks and Geeks, where they put all the stuff that they can find in their parents' pantry in a blender and drink it as a milkshake.
Yep.
Used to do that back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. I should add another one, because you reminded me of when one of my favorite all-time comedies is Saving Silverman. And they have a Big Montana drink or something like that, or a Big Montana from Arby's. Oh wait, no, they don't do that. They do. When they have Judith locked up in the basement,
Judith,
they give her breakfast. And he's like, it's pancakes and sausage and coffee or whatever, and they put all that into a blender.
Well, yeah, no, that Saving Silverman is a very underrated movie.
Very underrated. I quote it like probably once a week at least.
Yeah, it's so I still think about it. Like like the Neil Diamond stuff. Like, it's just such a funny movie. Steve Zahn and Jack Black need to make more movies together.
I think even last night I did some joke from that movie with my son and my wife, where I was like, look into both of our eyes at the same time and say it.
Oh, it's so good. It's so funny. I love that movie. Anyway, we're off topic. But yeah, food from a movie that had you curious. I have one. So interestingly enough, my first one actually somebody mentioned on Reddit, which we'll get to for sure. But the one I picked was the Pixie Stick sandwich in Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
So like, it looks like it was like that bologna with olives in it that she threw away, and then it just became kind of like a mayonnaise-y mustard Pixie Sticks Captain Crunch sandwich between two pieces of white bread. And I've never done that, but I've always wanted to. And our good friend Susan Kamyao, that's her favorite movie of all time, besides Obvious Child. And I wonder if she's ever done that.
We'll have to ask her.
I know. And then, you know, I didn't go like the usual route of like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. you know, the Monkey Brains or anything like that. Or even the other Robin Williams movie, Hook, with that crazy scene with the feast they dream up. Mm-hmm. I didn't go there. But shall we go to Reddit and read the top comment, the one that I that was my original pick?
Yeah, go for it.
The Wiener Dog, the Twinkie Wiener sandwich from UHF. God damn, that is such a... So if you don't, if you're unfamiliar with UHF, UHF is another underrated movie starring Weird Al Yankovic, who gets to program a television channel news or television station with all crazy types of shows. And his favorite meal is that he takes a Twinkie and he puts like a hot dog wiener in it and he puts it in the microwave and he eats it and it's unbelievably good. So I've done this before, and actually there's a wing place here in Texas called Pluckers, and they had a rewards point system at one point. And several years ago, I used to go to Pluckers all the time because they had like trivia nights and everything there, and I used to put like our group's team, like there's like maybe 15 of us all on my card. And so I racked up like a massive amount of points. And so one of the perks, if you got so many points, you got to create a food item and it be on the menu. So I did the wiener dog thing, but it was a fried Twinkie with a hot dog wiener in it with a scoop of ice cream on top. And it's so good. You think like, that sounds terrible. It's like, no, it's not. It's like savory and sweet mixing together. And it's actually really good. But yes, Mansardonfire said the Twinkie wiener sandwich from UHF. I'd probably try an upscale hipster version of it, is what he said. So interesting. And so he went further in his comment saying he would have a deep fried Twinkie, artisanal sausage, and heirloom beer cheese with a dollop of locally sourced organic cream from a cow who gave her informed consent, served on an old roof shingle with dry ice, of course.
That's pretty incredible.
We love our Reddit audience, don't we?
Of course.
Oh my God.
The easy way to put a smile on your face during the week.
He went all out there, didn't he?
Yep.
He gets an upvote. Deep fried Twinkie, artisanal sausage, and heirloom beer cheese with a dollop of locally sourced organic cream from a cow who gave her informed consent. Served on an old roof shingle with dry ice, of course. Oh my goodness, how good is that? Oh, okay. Sox fan 15203 said Oreos dipped in peanut butter from the Parent Trap. Parent Trap.
Right, yeah.
I think I did that. Yeah. It's Oreos and peanut butter. It's good. Ears 13 said human flesh, every zombie movie. So there you go.
We got to find out who that guy is and report him to the police.
Yeah, human flesh. That's weird. Let's see. Willickstan says a greasy pork sandwich served in a dirty ashtray, which I don't remember what movie that is. Do you know?
No, but I don't know why in God's name you would try that.
I'm going to look that up real quick to see if that's from a movie. A greasy pork sandwich served in a dirty ashtray. Oh, fuck. How did we not know this? It's Weird Science.
Oh, yeah.
Goddamn Chet.
I just watched that recently.
We really did. I can't believe we didn't even put that together. Yes, a greasy pork sandwich served in a dirty ashtray. Chet from Weird Science. There you go. And then Bjorn Beetleborg, I had to look this one up, and it's ridiculously obscure. The Big Gooey Messy Burger.
Ooh, I know that.
Jesus Christ, of course you do.
Yeah. It takes two, man.
Jesus Christ, I can't believe you knew that.
Man, high five to that person. Yeah, that was another movie I grew up on. I actually quote that one all the time.
What, you quote a young Olsen twin movie?
That one actually like went to theaters. It was a big one, and so it has a good cast. Christy Alley.
So the Big Gooey Messy Burger is basically Sloppy Joe's sandwich, right?
Yeah, it is. In the scene, the other twin has never had anything, kind of like the Parent Trap. So, man, good on these people for doing twin movies where, you know, people come from opposite ends of the earth.
Oh, that's so funny. I'm just glad Preston knew this. He's like, I quote this too.
Yeah, but like when my son plays the piano in our, because he's a 2-year-old, he's playing the piano. He's playing like, not playing anything. It just sounds like really rough. In that movie, one of the twins is playing the piano. Mind you that she's supposed to be the one that's really skilled at the piano, but they switched places, and so it's the other one. And so she's like, I'm going to play something for my stepmother, who I absolutely adore. And then she plays horribly. And said, this is something by Chopin.
This is not the same Olsen twin movie where they're out in New York or something and they
give I believe that one was like way later when they were like teens.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of them. My wife has seen like all of them. I can't recall. It Takes Two was the big one because I actually saw that one in theaters.
Oh my, oh my, Preston. All right, and then I guess Dawn of Dane said, "Fool's gold loaf from What If? The sandwich consists of a single warmed, hollowed-out loaf of bread filled with the contents of one jar of creamy peanut butter, one jar of grape jelly, and a pound of bacon. The sandwich's connection to the singer Elvis Presley is the source of its legend and prolonged interest."
Cool. Yeah.
And then our last one, Splitzo, says the Geno's cheesesteak from Shazam. And I was trying to remember when they ate a Shazam, ate the Geno's cheesesteak. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. But,
and or that had me thinking about Kazam when they have all that junk food that falls from the sky when Shaq rains down all that junk food and they have that weird stuff.
There you go, folks. If you want to let us know what your weird food is that you want to try out, send us an email at mybloodypodcast@gmail.com and let us know if you want to try Chef's chocolate salty balls or not. I don't know. But thank you, Reddit, so much for this. But I think the winner of today is the big gooey messy burger.
Yeah, it definitely won my heart.
Well, that one, but also just the hipster version. Yeah, was fantastic.
You get a gift card of love.
Yes, you do. Oh my God, that was great. So yes, that is my bloody question. We're moving on now to bloody recommendations, where we recommend a movie, new or vintage, that we just want you to see again, watch for the first time, that we just want you to watch, give a brief description of it and why we like it. Preston, bloody recommendation time.
Yes, my bloody recommendation this week is a 1985 film called The New Kids.
They are brother and sister alone.
Man said Mac and Mom are dead.
On their own, without parents, without friends, trying to make it in a new town.
Something bothering you, cousin?
No, nothing ever bothers me.
Facing a dangerous new enemy.
Yeah, I can get it.
Says who?
That's me and $50.
A gang that will stop at nothing to add one new word to their lives. Terror.
You think we ought to light ourselves a little fire?
No! You want crazy? Well, I'll show you crazy.
It was most recently released from Mill Creek Entertainment. Mill Creek Entertainment, we've talked about them a few times. I believe even James Cole Clay brought them up before. But they release movies very cheap. They're like around $8 to $15, and they don't go all out with the special features. That's probably why it's so cheap. But the aesthetic of the release itself is amazing. It's reflective of the MVD Rewind collection that I've talked about, where they have releases or like slip covers that look just like the VHS days, where they have like VHSs poking out, a worn kind of look. And The New Kids is a movie that deserves that sort of release, that fun kind of, because it's a VHS kind of movie. But it's it stars Shannon Presby, who was an actor in the 80s, did like some small stuff on Different Strokes, some other big show that's escaping my mind at the moment. But he's no longer an actor. He like stopped being an actor before the new decade in the 90s. But it also has Lori Loughlin in it, the great Lori Loughlin of she'll do anything for her own kids. But James Spader is also in it, and he plays the villain. I believe at the exact same year, Tough Tough came out with James Spader. But this one, he's like a blonde asshole in this story. And I should say that Shannon Presby and Lori Loughlin play brother and sister. They're teenagers in high school. Their parents, with the father being played by Tom Atkins, but he's only in it for a brief period because their parents unfortunately perish in a car accident. And so they are forced to live with their relatives in Florida, and they go to a new school, and then they end up being terrorized by a local street gang led by James Spader's character. So this is a movie of just these kids just trying to live a normal life with their relatives, which run like an amusement park. And so they're like fun-loving, and at the beginning of this movie, they're shown like spending time with their dad, played by Tom Atkins. And Tom Atkins comes from a military background, and so he like trains their kids like as if they're being about to be in the movie Red Dawn. They're like climbing walls and doing all these like boot camp-style stuff, and so they can defend themselves. And so it makes great competition with a local street gang because it becomes like a series of like one upping each other. And the lengths that they go to with it being like one will violate one side of this fight, and then the other one will go over to their house in the middle of the night with a knife at their throat and ask for all their money to pay for some damage that was done to their a car. So it gets pretty violent, especially by the end of the movie. Like it's pretty shocking to the places that they go to. But the feeling that I have by the end of the movie is pretty similar to like The Good Son, where things just kind of seem like kind of kosher and sweet at the beginning, and then as things progress, it gets worse and worse before it becomes extremely violent. So I had never seen this movie, but it's highly enjoyable. The performances are fantastic, and just the boldness of the story, it's sheer daring, is what makes it pretty exciting. And I should mention that it's directed by Sean S. Cunningham, who directed the first Friday the 13th. So you know that it has a little more juice, a little more gas in its engine. So The New Kids from 1985, that's my recommendation for this week. And you can go on Mill Creek Entertainment's website and pick it up, or I believe you can just get it through Amazon pretty cheap as well.
There you go. There you go. Nicely done. My recommendation this week, more or less kind of similar feel, I guess, in tone to our main feature presentation. I'm going to talk about my suggestion this week is the 1990 film The Witches.
From the incredible imagination of Jim Henson and director Nicholas Roeg comes a fascinating new fantasy adventure. The Witches. For when a little boy accidentally stumbles into their secret world, he finds they've got a lot more power.
Bring it to me!
Than he ever imagined.
Grandma, it's me, Luke.
Luke,
They turned me into a mouse.
Oh, my. It was the Grand High Witch.
Join Luke on his remarkable journey.
Bye.
Now, the witches are on his tail.
Whoa.
And he must scurry around their evil plots. Squeak past every danger. Finally setting the trap that will save the world from the witches.
You are in for a treat.
We must stop them.
Directed by Nicholas Rogue and produced by Jim Henson. I know we've talked about it before, but we haven't done like a full feature presentation on this because I'll keep it pretty brief. But this movie is
Did you get the Warner Archive Collection version of it?
I did not. Did you?
I haven't yet. I know it came out Tuesday, I believe, this week, but I haven't got the... Usually I get those sorts of announcements pretty late, so I expect that I will probably watch it and review it this coming week or so, pretty soon.
Yeah, because I asked for that just because, I mean, it's such a good movie, and I think it still holds up because it was on Netflix or Hulu or something like that, and, you know, it's a kids' film. Jim Henson, who did The Muppets, it's like he produced it, he's heavy-handed in it, and it's based off the book by Roald Dahl, and this movie, it's... scary, has some very adult themes, but it's also kind of like a whimsical, funny kind of kid movie too, where, you know, an 8-year-old boy has to move in with his grandmother in England, and he starts noticing these things, like there's actual witches there who want to kidnap children and basically kill them. Well, not basically, that's what they want to do. And so this little boy is turned into a mouse, and it's crazy. There's all sorts of like creepy supernatural stuff in there, and oh my goodness, it's just so good. And it's like one hell of a performance from Angelica Houston as the Grand High Witch. And but then there's like people like Mr. Bean, Rowan Atkinson's in there. Like it's crazy. But this movie perfectly combines like that aspect of terror and comedy, and it can be for everybody, kids and adults alike. So yeah, please go see this movie, The Witches, and I'm sure very soon we're going to do a big presentation on this.
For sure.
And then unfortunately, they're remaking this movie. But I will say, not unfortunately, but I mean, Anne Hathaway, Octavia Spencer, Stanley Tucci, and Chris Rock are part of it, and it's going to be directed by Robert Zemeckis. So, I mean, I have faith there, but then again, it's going to be hard not to have... I don't know. What do you think?
Just do something else, Robert Zemeckis. You're creative, and you can do an original tale.
Yeah, echo that. But yes, The New Kids and The Witches. Please see that. But let's move on to our feature presentation. What do you say, man?
For sure.
Let's do it. Well, we're going to talk about Little Monsters.
Monster!
There is nothing under your bed, now why don't you just go to sleep, okay?
There was a monster!
There are no monsters.
If you say there's no monster, then switch rooms with me.
Boo.
Tonight is your lucky night. Imagine a world solely of kids. No teachers, no rules, no homework, no parents. Come on now!
From 1989, directed by Richard Allen Greenberg, written by Terry Rossio and Ted Elliott, and starring Fred Savage, Daniel Stern, and Howie Mandel, amongst others, including Fred Savage's younger brother, Ben Savage. This movie is unbelievably still good and so far out there. Like, it just... So, how do you explain this movie? This movie, I want to say that Pixar... Monsters, Inc., like, got a lot of ideas from this movie, because like Pixar, Monsters, Inc., and Little Monsters came out way before that, Little Monsters is about a group of monsters who live in a kind of netherworld of sorts, who pop up under your bed and scare you. And it's not like because they need it to power their city, but it's kind of to just for like their own enjoyment, which is kind of sadistic. But it's also there's like a nefarious plot underneath that as well. And it just works well. And this is kind of like at the height of Fred Savage in Wonder Years. And the voice of Fred Savage in Wonder Years was Daniel Stern. So Daniel Stern plays his dad in this movie, which was really cool. But Preston had a really funny way of describing the best friend to Fred Savage's character in this movie, who's a monster named Maurice, played by Howie Mandel. And how did you describe him, Preston?
It's like he snorts a line, many lines, like all the cocaine on the corner of the street, and then watched Beetlejuice religiously. He's very reminiscent of a lot of those movies with kids movies that came out. Oddly enough, Terry and Ted, who wrote this film, they also wrote the 1992 Aladdin, or 1993, 92, whatever. And that one has the genie in it. And he also is like this kind of like motor mouth, crazy sidekick character, except I would say Howie Mandel is way worse.
Right. No, yeah, it's a crazy movie. So kind of like an overall synopsis of this plot is that Fred Savage and his younger brother with their two parents move to a new neighborhood, just like suburban Boston area. And they, you know, they're not like getting along. The parents are definitely not getting along, and we'll get more to that in a bit. But all of a sudden, like, things start happening to the house. Like, there's like these pranks being pulled in the house, and of course the parents blame the kids for it, but it turns out there's like this monster who's, I guess, weakness, like kryptonite, is like light, like big lights or sunlight or anything like that. So kind of vampire-ish.
It's probably in Howie Mandel's contract, since he also voiced Gizmo.
Right. Yes, that's very true. And then, this monster and Fred Savage just kind of become best friends, and the monster brings Fred Savage down to their world where it's kind of like a kid's utopia. Like, there's no homework, there's no parents, nobody's telling you anything to do.
Is it, though? Is it a utopia?
No, it's not like a utopia, but there's scenes like, oh my God, there's an arcade, you can eat all the pizza you want, you know, and like a little kid is like, oh my God, yes, you know, but underneath
this... They got that going for them, but other than that, it's a stack of boxes and pieces of wood with like little flares going around to be like, oh, it's magic.
Yeah, so that's kind of the thing, like it's not like a pretty picture at all. Like I said, there's a nefarious undertone here as to why this world exists and why the kids are being brought down there. And I think that's where it comes in, because this is a horror podcast. I think there's a lot of horror and a lot of adult themes here, such as Fred Savage's parents who are like actively getting divorced, and you see them fighting. And like, it's pretty crazy, even to this day, to watch it. I'm like, oh man, I remember watching this movie and not like really catching all of the bits to it, but after seeing it as an adult, you're like, wow, they really did this movie well. What do you think, man?
That's debatable.
You don't think they did this movie well?
I don't think they did it well. Let me first say that I grew up loving this movie. I love it so much. And so I'm going to try to put my nostalgic heart aside for a little bit and comment on it from a modern perspective. In that I think it does have like a lot of those daring moments of it kind of, as you look back on it as an adult, and just as you said, you're like, man, did not remember it being like this. And it's kind of dark and more relatability for a child. It's kind of like that there as like in a Mr. Rogers kind of way, being like using some sort of story or visualization to relate to children and let them know that, hey, you're not alone, that parents, you know, they go through divorces, and then you're there, and it's as you're going through your own coming of age story. And so I think I applaud it for that, but I think it's also, you cannot deny that it's a pretty mean-spirited film. I forgot, like, all those scenes of Fred Savage going around with Maurice, bouncing around houses, and at one point Maurice goes up to the bully's house, Fred Savage's bully's house, who's played by what's his face from Home Alone?
Oh, Buzz.
Buzz, yes. So they grab his apple juice and he pisses in it and puts it in there. And so,
it's such a funny scene, though.
It's a funny, but I don't know. It's kind of terrible and terrifying that, because it follows up that scene with like the kids waking up the next morning to their angry parents being like, what did you do?
But like, they're like harmless things, like putting peanut butter on the phone, you know, stuff like that. You know, that's like, you're like, yeah,
I don't know,
you get pissed
in your apple juice is not that harmless.
I would piss in a bully's apple juice, believe you me. If some kid was giving you shit, you'd be like, yeah, I'm gonna piss in your apple juice, man.
Yeah. Well, the times are new.
I don't know. They're the same. We're just dealing with it differently. But I think pissing in somebody's apple juice who's giving you shit is a good way to go about it. But they're like mostly harmless, like pranks, like putting plastic over the toilet seat, or you know,
it traumatizing children. You're putting your bicycle out behind your dad's car as he's backing out, and he comes out and tears your ear off. I think for at one angle, it's like super fascinating that at one point Maurice goes like, "We're the reason why brothers and sisters hate each other."
but that's a thing growing up, though.
Yeah, like they're trying to fill in like reasons as to like why that happens, but he's still, it's like it's promoting that sort of behavior.
But see, I would disagree. I think at first, like, that's why the monster is trying to get him to do it. But then by the end,
they have their little message. But still, like, I mean, he's enjoying it. At least he, at one point, and I think that's kind of where the movie recovers, is by the end, he has, like, I can't do that. That's cruel.
Well, there is that. And then there is, like, the arc of Ronnie Coleman, the bully, who becomes their friend and realize, you know, I just think that's good. Like, I think there, you have to go down that road to figure that out, perhaps. But I mean, it was all kind of almost harmless fun. Like, I mean, after watching this movie growing up, I didn't do any of that, you know? I mean, I imitated Maurice for sure with his funny dialogue and stuff like that. But I didn't like put peanut butter on the phone or plastic on the toilet seat or anything. You know, there's like ridiculous pranks. But, you know, growing up, it's, you know, it's mostly, you know, kids and their parents, they don't get along sort of things, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, and that's why I enjoyed it so much as a kid, as it was there for me to just kind of enjoy, and it has that kind of like 80s goofiness with all its in a lot of those elements that were like recreated in like movies like Hook, when they're playing baseball and they're hitting the clocks, and this one has like Monster Ball and they're like hitting, breaking stuff that's inside that world. That I think it's a fun like fantasy exploration for kids to some level, but I there's still like some things that you have to like poke in there. I'm not in no way saying that this movie is in a complete piece of shit. I just think that as an adult, like, you start to feel that the movie is kind of tearing a little bit at the seams.
I don't know. I still like it. Because I think
I really think it's because you are, it's because of your nostalgia for the film. Can you really put that aside for a second and then just really think about some of the things that happen in this movie and not say that some of it is not problematic?
I mean, okay, so problematic of like the monster scaring a little baby, like that was pretty crazy. I mean, we see YouTube videos.
That's it being a horror movie. Like something like that, I guess, is okay that it has it in there because it has those horror elements. So I don't know. It's a tug of war for me that it has some things that are problematic and then some things that it can just have it because, hey, it's a monster movie. And so it can be cruel as long as it has some sort of moral message that kids can kind of take away from it by the end.
But I also think, like, as far as like the divorce of his parents, or they're not giving their kids enough time spent with each other, that I think they act out, and I think they find an escape in this other world of monsters and fun, and you know, kind
people
of
that
like
they can relate to
being bad. Yeah, kind of like, you know, and like even like how like Howie Mandel's character, he played it like perfectly, because it's kind of like when you said Monster Ball, he explains like, you get the shit, you break the shit, and then you put the shit back. It's called Monster Ball. And it's just like, okay, that sounds fun, let's do it. And there, it just sounds like fun. And like there, like it's 80s, so there are montages. But then it goes into a very dark territory with two monsters named Boy, who's the ruler of the monster world, and his sidekick named Snick. And it's kind of terrifying, don't you think?
Yeah, the Boy especially. I think the Boy is what stuck out to me the most as a kid and kind of haunts my dreams when his face comes off and it's that weird looking monster face. But his whole kind of like polite kind of demeanor, which is like creepy in a lot of movies, like Get Out, where, you know, they can be, or Black Klansman with like the wife of one of the KKK members who is just like so sweet and loving, but they're doing some sinister shit. So like that stuff's pretty terrifying to me. And the Boy is played by Brett from Pulp Fiction, who says, "What?" And then
the big brain on bread.
Yeah, big brain on bread. And then Rick DeCumen plays Snick.
May he rest in peace. He was in The Burbs.
Yep.
The neighbor to Tom Hanks.
Correct. And so, yeah, their aesthetics are very creepy. Like, Snick looks like bat out of hell, like Meatloaf or something like that. Or modern Danzig or something. With a really bad wig. But, yeah, they were scary. So those two characters made this kids' movie more than just being a kids' movie.
Yeah, that's there, because like the visual effects on at least on Boy is pretty terrifying, because it looks like a normal person, but when they kind of pan around, he is anything but, and his demeanor is creepy, and just like his overall like purpose is very sinister. And I mean, yes, you get like kind of like the cheesy kids montage of defeating him type of thing and getting ready to defeat him. But I think it all plays pretty well and mixes well, I think, because I think if they went straight horror, it wouldn't have worked. Don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but I really do think this movie still holds up, you know? I mean, yes, I get the point where you say like the bullying thing and pulling pranks, but like what's wrong with pulling pranks on somebody as like easy as
if it's easy? But I think there's a line that you can cross, but as long as the characters like learn their lessons by the end, because at some point like it could be, you know, kids watching this and being like, oh, I do that kind of stuff, I lash out like that because my parents are neglect me, or they're divorcing and this is a difficult time. Like, it's just like that those parts of the film is like it bringing into more of a gritty reality which kind of gives it more weight. But if it didn't have some of those moments where it's like at the end and they didn't learn their lessons, it'd be a pretty, it still is a mean-spirited movie, but there's a bit of a charm to it. So I don't know. I'm pretty conflicted about the experience of watching it as a kid or as an adult. But I still love it just because it was a movie that I grew up on and I have a strong affection for it.
All right. That's it. I have a strong affection for it too. You say the nostalgia aspect gets me, and I was like, yeah, no. I mean, I do like young Fred Savage in these movies, but I also think it just still is almost kind of timeless. I think. It's hard.
If it was a more encompassing story, it would have done a little bit more at the end than just being like, "Hey, the family calls and be like, oh, well, what's happening to their divorce situation? That isn't exactly resolved, and what will the life be like going forward? It kind of like needed maybe an epilogue scene to kind of set like kind of." I guess the kind of lessons that are at the end of episodes of the Wonder Years, like it needed something like that.
Right. And I think like leaving it ambiguous because like they were moving, the parents were moving out, but then you see like they're on the phone with their kids together. But I think like the big shock was that Maurice was no longer going to be a part of their life anymore. I think that like the world was closed to them, right?
They could either stay, become monsters to be friends, or they could just be like, hey, we learned what we needed to, and then we can go back into our lives and try to appreciate things. Or at least that's kind of what I gather from it, or the way that I wish for it to kind of go.
Right. No, I'm hoping. I know there's been talk about like doing like a remake of this or something like that, but do you think they could do this, or do you think they could do like a distant sequel or something like this?
I think a distant sequel would be cool. If they did a remake, I don't know. Like every time I imagine myself or imagine a remake, I'm just picturing Tim Burton doing it, and I don't want that to happen, or at least modern God. Tim Burton. And it'd just be like, what would the world be like, that utopia, as we talked about? The monster world be like with today's special effects, and I would want some sort of in between where it looks like. I mean, this movie probably didn't have like a huge budget, and so it's funny to watch it and then see where they're running to beat the sun from rising. By running from one point of the country in New York to the other in the underground world, which I guess is way shorter because they're not going to run in a few hours time from New York to Malibu, California. And it put up signs and it just looks like they're running in the same area, except they just put new signs up. But, So there's stuff like that. They didn't have the budget that they needed to make this movie more wondrous than it is. But I think there's enough there, especially like that arcade scene, even though I would argue that Maurice today is really exhausting to watch. He's funny and he has those great moments like the baseball cards, like need him, got him, need him. That's funny. And he has like jokes here and there, like what you were saying when they're playing monster ball, like it's enjoyable, but it's almost like watching Finding Dory after a while. It's just like, ooh, pump the brakes, man. Overall, I think it's fine. It's a pretty solid movie to watch. But I don't know if it's going to be one that I like make sure that is in the queue for my son to watch. But
because you don't want him pulling pranks on you, that's
sure. I don't need that in his head. It'd be unless it was like, all right, son. So you see all the stuff that they did? It doesn't do any good. Only creates chaos. So let's not. I mean, I'm already pulling my hair out enough. already, so let's not feed the beast.
Oh, you make me laugh. You make me sad. But yeah, Little Monsters. I'm gonna say, like, I still love this movie, and I think it's a great kids movie, even to this day. I think it teaches good lessons, but you also have fun being a kid. I mean, I just look at it like that.
Okay, I think bottom line is for it to be a better movie, they should have explored the consequences and lessons further more than it just being like, I don't know, Saturday Night Fever, where it's like rapey vibes the entire time. And then at the very end, he learns his lesson in the last minute of the movie.
Right.
And you're like, good God, dude. So I think that's what probably should have happened, that if they would have explored it a little bit deeper, and had that epilogue like I was talking about, where there's just like they have a good conversation to kind of bring it full circle of having like another sit down with dad, where, because Daniel Stern's dad character is a fucking asshole the entire time. He's not a very good dad. He doesn't listen to his kids. And so I want the parents to have those lessons too. I want them to be like more than just them being concerned parents who are trying to figure out where their kids are. As like, it well, there's a lesson here that put your divorcing parents in a shitty situation where they are scared to death, and then they'll come back together. A lot of movies like that I grew up, like House Arrest from the 90s, dealt with that. Like they locked all their parents down in the basement so they could or in prison, essentially, to work out their problems. But yeah, I think if they just explored that a little deeper, it would be a more timeless film.
There you go. I still
you agree,
enjoy it.
Brian.
No,
you
I agree. I enjoy it. I enjoy the movie. I agree with Preston on everything.
Except Pet Sematary.
Except Pet Sematary. Fuck that movie.
You haven't rewatched it yet, I can tell.
I have not. I will. But yeah, that's our show, Little Monsters. Lots of fun, good stuff. And then The New Kids and The Witches, of course, for My Bloody Podcast episode 64 on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, and of course Spotify now. And we are working on our website, I believe. mybloodypodcast.net. So hopefully very soon it'll be very fully functional.
Oh wait, I forgot something that I promised. I promised that I was going to make another Once Upon a Time in Hollywood reference. And how does, at the end of Little Monsters, does Maurice save the day?
How does he save the day?
Yeah, when the kids are trapped. It looks like they're not going to make it out. Maurice saves the day. How does he do it?
I'm trying to remember. Doesn't he appear with a flamethrower or something like that?
That is right. And how does that relate to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? He fucking Rick Dalton's that shit.
I'm telling you, Little Monsters is the inspiration for every movie.
Yeah, Quentin Tarantino was watching that. I was just laughing his ass off.
Oh, so good. So funny. Yeah, look, there you go. Two Once Upon a Time in Hollywood references. Flamethrower. Oh my God. Very good. I like it. I love it. So yeah, that's our podcast for today. Of course, we're on all these places you can subscribe to us. And of course, you can find me, Brian, at highdefdigest.com and boomstickcomics.com. And then you can find Preston. Where can they find you today, Preston?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Preston Barta, B-A-R-T-A. And you can find my writing in the Ditton Record Chronicle or DittonRC.com. I have an interview piece out with the main actress from The Nightingale, which we talked about not too long ago. So I have that up. And then you can find me also on freshfiction.tv, where I'm a features editor. We have a, I can't remember if we have a review up for Ready or Not, but I know that we have an interview with Radio Silence. So we have that up. So you can check that out on freshfiction.tv.
All right. Very cool. And we will be back next week with all new episode. And Preston, thank you so much. We love you.
Thank you. I'll see you underneath your bed tonight.
Please.